I'm Carla Campbell from Drexel School of Public Health. I want to acknowledge one of my co-investigators in the audience, Dr. Curtis Cummings. Also to acknowledge Robert Wood Johnson, the Public Health Law Research Program, which was has given us this really nice opportunity to look at the Philadelphia Lead Court. And I have no disclosures. So moving along to a slightly different health problem, elevated blood lead levels and lead exposure in children is still one of the major environmental health problems for children in the U.S., and the major lead exposure is through lead-based paint hazards in pre-1978 housing that has lead-based paint, particularly in properties that are in poor repair with deferred maintenance. And the way kids get poisoned is they basically touch everything with their hands and put it in their mouths, the hand-to-mouth activity. It's just a normal part of child development. But when they're touching surfaces that have lead dust or lead soil, lead-contaminated soil, then all of that gets ingested typically hundreds of times each day. And that's how most U.S. children are getting poisoned with lead and develop elevated blood lead levels. Many cities find enforcement of orders to remediate lead hazards in housing to be difficult for multiple reasons. And we may get into some of those as we go through. And then also, I think this health problem is really a typical public health problem in that it involves multiple stakeholders just by definition. So the child, the parents, the healthcare provider, the property owner, and then the context in which they live, the city, county, and state authorities who make and enforce different laws, ordinances, and codes. So it gets to be a pretty complex issue. This is the culprit here, lead-based paint in poor condition, and we've got lots of buildings in Philly with that, and other large cities around the country, particularly northeast and midwestern cities. So a little background to Lead Court. The Lead Abatement Strike Team was created in 2002, convened by the Commissioner of Health at the time, and it created a process by which a number of different agencies were convened together on a regular basis by the managing director of the city. And it really created the opportunity then by November 2002 for the health and law departments, the Office of the City Solicitor, and the Court of Common Pleas to all come together and create a specialized court to hear cases in situations where a property was identified with lead hazards and yet the owner did not respond to orders to remediate those hazards. And prior to 2001, there was little enforcement of the orders, to the point that there was a backlog of about 1,400 cases that was then recognized that this just wasn't feasible, you know, that something had to be done, something more drastic to solve the problem of all of these children living in unsafe housing. So on the left side, you'll see the old approach, the PDPH, Philadelphia Department of Public Health, with the CLIP program trying to deal with this issue of lead hazards in housing. And then with the last team, many different agencies are called in, including the law department and the courts, which is the part that I'm going to talk about today. But there were about four or five housing agencies, all of them doing different things. Office of Emergency Shelters as well helped with the problem. And so this is just an example of Lead Court. Nothing really, you know, just a regular courtroom, but a very different approach within the walls of the courtroom. And so the Lead Court process, the way the property went, a child would be identified with an EBL, elevated blood lead. Lead risk assessment was done in the property, and then if lead hazards were found, the Philadelphia Health Department would issue orders to the owner to remediate the lead hazards within 10 days. And then you'll just see listed some of the things that needed to be done. All deteriorated lead paint needed to be removed. Surfaces clean and washable, smooth without any peeling. And also the floors and windowsills had to achieve EPA dust lead levels. And those are levels of 40 for floors and 250 for windowsills. Some people contend that those aren't protective enough, but anyway, our definition and the definition from HUD at the moment is that those levels are ones that would give compliance. So with the reinspection, essentially the City Health Department is seeing if there's been any action to address the orders. Typically, they don't expect the complete remediation to have occurred within 10 days, but there has to be good faith action by the property owner that they're in the process of doing so. And the LNI, the Department of Licenses and Inspections, is notified of the violation. And then they can revoke the owner's rental license, which means the tenant can stop paying rent until the work is done, and the landlord cannot evict the tenant. And then this information is sent to the law department, and they go through the process of developing a complaint, which contains copies of all of the relevant documents, which are then hand-delivered to the owner. So there's no excuse about, oh, I never got, you know, the paperwork. And this is the law complaint, just a picture of law, lead court. And so our study with Robert Wood Johnson actually had two parts. We had a quantitative study and a qualitative study. And the questions we asked are, having this specialized court process, does it improve outcomes? Is it more effective than when these issues are resolved either within a routine court that's not specialized or in other ways, such as the health department ordering the owner to do the work? And are more properties remediated, leading to less lead exposure for the resident children? And then lastly, what do the participants think of the lead court process? And so I'm going to focus on that third goal for this presentation. One of our respondents just summarized very well the complexity of the issue of childhood lead poisoning, and he said it is cases of childhood poisoning, it's a public health matter of extreme urgency, it's a housing issue, it's a socioeconomic issue, it's a child welfare issue, it's a landlord-tenant issue, it's a housing stock issue, all of which in old cities like Philadelphia get wrapped up into one. And so, you know, having a judicial process where the judiciary learn about what childhood lead poisoning is all about, you create a sensitivity in the judges to the issue. So, as I said, there were two parts to the study. The quantitative study crunched a bunch of numbers, about 4,200 properties with lead who had had an initial failed home inspection during the period of 1998 to 2008. And when we looked at 1 year from that initial failed inspection, which triggered the whole process of getting the case into lead court or at least giving orders to the owner pre-lead court, we looked at within 1 year what percent of properties came into compliance. And so with the pre-court period from 1998 to 2002, it was 6.6%, and then jumped up to 76.8% during the court era. So hugely different results, and the actual numbers of the properties were much higher as well in the court era. And I'll be presenting those results tomorrow afternoon in one of the sections under the environment section. Also then when we looked at out to 4 years past the initial failed inspection, what percent, you know, came on board after the first year? Not very many. Pretty much what was done the first year was what was going to be done. the pre-court went up to 18% and the court went up to 83%. So, but still, the very different change in terms of the percent of properties that were remediated and made safe for the resident children. And then when we looked at factors for compliance, being in the court era, it was 8 times more likely that compliance would occur. We looked at blood lead levels as they were related to compliance, and basically found that they did decrease over time. They were higher in the pre-court period, which was previous in history, and may reflect that, and also higher in older children. We dichotomized them into less than 2 years and 2 years and over. And kids typically peak at around 2 years, 2.5 years of age with their blood lead levels. So now I'm going to move on to the qualitative analysis, where we sat down with 15 folks from the health and law departments and from the court and asked them 15 questions. Seven of them had a Likert scale, so we could sort of quantitatively analyze that. But then we also, for all the questions, had open-ended questions to get an idea of what they thought. And some of these folks, well, one person I know had a sort of a priori sense that, oh yes, lead court was very effective. But I think it was very nice to be able to go through and prove that case, because this may be a model, you know, for other cities that would like to do a similar type of court system. So the first question, you know, lead court was effective, and we had them rate it from anywhere from extremely effective to not at all. And, you know, everybody was in the extremely effective or close to range, not a whole lot of difference between the respondents with the means and medians. And then some of the comments people made, I think lead court has been doing a great job because the owner knows we're serious and there are fines that can be levied. So we're seeing a lot of properties come into compliance even before they go to court. For persons who appear in lead court, it appears that having a judge order them, issue an order telling them what to do, does have an impact on the results, and so they're much more inclined to do the work than when the health department just orders them to do that. So just ordering them, you know, may not be enough, but the lead court seemed to really send a bigger message home to property owners. And then the lead court, and one other person says that it was created to educate and sensitize judges hearing lead enforcement cases so that they understood that basically if the owner was given more time to do the work, that meant that that child would be continued to be exposed to lead hazards. And so they called it the group last because they wanted to remind themselves that that would be the last date, that there'd be a lead poison child added to the backlog where there wasn't resolution of the lead hazards in the property. So then we asked the group, you know, were the pre-court enforcement strategies effective? Well, as you can see, most of them were in that not at all effective or close to. And, you know, our respondents said the work was not getting done. The health department kept sending out notices, but homeowners simply weren't complying with the health department. And then one respondent said, previously we used to take the owner to court, but then the judge would order the city health department to remediate, and there wasn't any prioritization of resources or which cases, you know, would come first. So it wasn't very effective when they did take cases to court. I will say it's modeled on tuberculosis court, which is an older court in Philadelphia. And it was a relatively simple problem. If the patient wasn't taking their medications and were a danger to public health, they basically would be put into a inpatient hospital ward and you know, given their medication. So it was a very simple process. The lead court, you know, as I hope I convinced you, was for a process of exposure to children that is extremely complex and difficult to resolve. This just talks a little bit about the pre-printed menu, and they did find that doing a little checklist where all the options were available worked better. We asked about the influence of the lead hazard control grants from HUD, and those were extremely helpful. Some occupants had problems with getting clear title to their property, and that was a problem. Other respondents said having more funding would be great, and many could not have gotten the work done with the grants. And I do have a slide I'll show tomorrow, but it does show that with the lead court, in the lead court era, many more HUD grants were obtained. These quotes basically say that a lot of the homeowners, either owner-occupants or even small property owners, landlords that might have one or two properties, basically are fairly poor and don't have a lot of money, and that the HUD grants, really help them. And some people have properties by way of inheritance, but they haven't inherited any means to keep them up and maintain them. In terms of fines, basically those were conditional fines. If the defendant didn't come to court or if they refused to cooperate with the remediation or abatement, it's less often that absolute fines would be given, and those were mostly for egregious disregard for the court. Then we asked three advantages of lead court. I'm going to move on because we have a lot of material here, but let me just show you the advantages and disadvantages. And really, the advantages far outweighed the disadvantages. We did ask the respondents for three of each. But many commented, it led to consistent enforcement. It educated all kinds of folks, the judges, the owners, and everyone else, sped up the lead control process, and it gives employment to those doing lead hazard control work. They went on about cooperation between law and public health, doctors and the courts, and all the folks that are involved in dealing with these children. And then I thought this was interesting, that it serves as an arena for the inspectors that are having trouble with property owners, and then also the tenants who are falsely accused of interfering with the work. So it brought everybody together in the same room with the judge. And this goes on, the three disadvantages, a lot of that had to do with getting title to the property and getting funding for the work. So we did ask three changes. More funding was a big one, coordination of data, and then getting owners to respond more quickly. Although, as we can see, on the average, they responded much better with lead court. So the key message is, basically, lead court was proven to be very effective. The pre-lead court, not effective. The last process may have been instrumental, and I don't know how effective it would have been without it, and ditto for the HUD grants. The city was very aggressive about getting lots of millions of dollars of HUD money. Anyway, I think it also supports the creation of proactive preventive policies, which we hope will be the next step in Philly, indicates property owners do respond to enforcement and court orders and fines when they are held accountable, and then this model could be replicated in other cities with similar problems. So thanks very much.
We have a good amount of time for questions, so any questions that you have for the panel, please? Dean?
Question to Julia. Could you just restate your point near the end about the mediating effect of legal structures on those variables and where you were thinking about going for areas of future study?
Oh, okay.
the question was about the interaction model that I rate the in the interaction statistical model, the other two variables that were initially at least modestly significant fell out, and those were the public health delivery system type and local board of health power, so that we just had the county government structure, which it was coded for an elected or reformed county government versus appointed county government. That was the one that remained, that stood at the end of the day. Yeah.
Can you go back to the slide just before? Was it fell out? Or?
Excuse me?
That's it.
Okay, sorry. And I think these slides are all available on the APHA website. Does that answer your question, Glenn? Jean, sorry. Okay.
Specialized court has done some work in a jurisdiction that I consider to be pretty progressive, but the judges are a substantial majority of judges are generally resistant to specialized courts. So this jurisdiction has a drug court that recently established a intoxicated driver's court along those same lines, though that was because really one judge was enthused about it of the 18 or so in the jurisdiction. When they've talked about mental health courts and other specialized courts, the vast majority of judges push back, considering themselves to be general decision makers and not wanting to be pigeonholed in particular areas. So I'm just wondering if in the lead court scenario or anywhere else along the way you encountered that phenomenon.
Yeah, I mean, in Philly, there had already been a TV court, and I believe at some point a drug court has been established. I'm not sure before or after lead court. The few judges that we interviewed were, for the most part, very positive about it. I didn't get a chance to show you some of the comments, but a couple of them said, geez, this was a great process. It was pleasant, positive. It was sort of collegial, everyone working together. Which I take it isn't always the case, their experiences with courts. And others of them sort of emphasized the ability to educate. One person said, once we got the person in the court and really explained why we worried about the property, the fact that a child was getting poisoned and might lose potential in terms of their development and future life, that all, made it a lot easier to be able to, get the job done. So the few folks that we talked to were very positive. I am going to be, I do have the opportunity to address a number of judges in Philly next week, actually. So it'll be interesting to see, when we get a larger group of them, what their thoughts are. But the ones that I interacted with were very, very positive about the experience.
Yeah.
For the lead court or compared to any other drug court? Kind of compared to other courts? No, we were basically looking at effectiveness in terms of whether more people were compliant when they had properties with lead hazards.
And were there specific costs involved that you could evaluate cost effectiveness?
We could, yeah. I mean, it could be done probably, the remediation work, but whether the court was ordering it or whether just the health department was ordering it, I'm not sure that would have made a difference, but it is an expensive process, and so I did put the slides in about the HUD grant. It is a difficult problem because, if an owner owns the property, then they really inherit all of these characteristics, good or bad, and they're responsible to live up to the health code, but it can be expensive for property owners, and that's why the health department has been very diligent about trying to get HUD monies in for low-income owners that have proper title to the property, and those are the subset that would qualify for the HUD grant.
Mm-hmm. And try to do more prevention. Do you guys have immediate plans with that? I was thinking you would do mapping or something.
Yeah. Well, for years we've been trying to get proactive inspection in with the state, and now there's been more of a focus with the city council to try to get this process in Philadelphia, which would call for, just at the time of turnarounds with a new tenant, that the owner would have to get in a lead risk assessor to evaluate the lead status of the property, and it would have to declare it lead safe. And so that would mean doing remediation work and specialized cleaning to get the lead dust levels down if they were not in compliance. So, yeah, I mean, we looked at 1,400. There were 1,400 properties of kids with lead hazards. So, and we know that we, you know, the numbers in Philly are like hundreds with levels of 10 or higher. It used to be thousands of kids. So we know that, you know, if you have a property that's not in good repair and it has lead-based paint, it's going to poison kids.
Perfect. I had actually one, well, two on the lead court issues as well. One, are the judges self-selecting within the lead court? I mean, are these judges who have said that I'd like to be involved with this? I mean, I see that a lot with some of the drug courts, mental health courts, and the like.
As far as I can tell, no.
They seem to be rotated,
and I couldn't figure out what the system was.
And are they going through any a specific training prior to joining that court? Or
well, this is going to be one of our recommendations. Initially, when the court was first established, there was a fairly extensive training process or educational process, and that is still ongoing, but it's a little unclear to what extent, and I think that it has dropped off over time. So that was one reason why we wanted to get in there at least on a yearly basis and, you know, hit people that were doing the judge education sessions. But I think that certainly is a recommendation that be done for each judge if it's not being done.
The second is, have you seen with the implementation of this process an increase in, I'm wondering about the feedback loops out into the community as far as, you know, getting screening, you know, children getting screening done, have you, and also just increases in numbers or decreases in numbers of complaints filed to the court. Have you tracked that since the implementation of the...
Oh, it's gone down quite a bit.
Okay.
Once the backlog was contained and then the new cases coming in, the prevalence of lead exposure has gone down nationally and also in Philadelphia. We think some of that may be just attrition of the worst housing finally getting demolished, but... probably some of it is more public health education of parents and health care providers. We have a pretty good screening rate in Philly in terms of health care providers that are out there actually doing the blood leads, you know, to get the results. Probably better than in some big cities.
Further questions? Well, please join me in thanking our panelists. Thank you very much.